When he was summoned at last to the chief's raft, Sparrowhawk looked at him a while and said, "You look like that Arran whom I saw in the court of the fountain, sleek as a golden seal. It suits you here, lad."
"Aye, my lord.
But where is here? We have left places behind us. We have sailed off the maps. Long ago I heard tell of the raft folk, but thought it only one more tale of the South Reach, a fancy without substance. Yet we were rescued by that fancy, and our lives saved by a myth." He spoke smilingly, as though he had shared in that timeless ease of life in the summer light. But his face was gaunt, and in his eyes lay an unlighted darkness. Arran saw that and faced it.
"I betrayed," he said, and stopped. "I betrayed your trust in me."
"How so, Arran?"
"There, at Oberhall, when for once you needed me. You were hurt and needed my help. I did nothing. The boat drifted and I let her drift. You were in pain and I did nothing for you. I saw land. I saw land and did not even try to turn the boat."
"Be still, lad," the maid said with such firmness that Arran obeyed. "And presently, tell me what you thought at that time."
"Nothing, my lord. Nothing. I thought there was no use in doing anything. I thought your wizardry was gone.
No,
that it had never been. That you had tricked me."
The sweat broke out on Arran's face, and he had to force his voice, but he went on.
"I was afraid of you. I was afraid of death. I was so afraid of it. I would not look at you, because you might be dying. I could think of nothing except that there was a way of not dying for me, if I could find it. But all the time life was running out, as if there was a great wound and the blood running from it, such as you had. But this was in everything. And I did nothing. Nothing but try to hide from the horror of dying."
He stopped, for saying the truth aloud was unendurable. It was not shame that stopped him, but fear. The same fear. He knew now why this tranquil life in sea and sunlight on the rafts seemed to him like an afterlife or a dream, unreal. It was because he knew in his heart that reality was empty, without life or warmth or color or sound, without meaning. There were no heights or depths. All this lovely play of form and light and color on the sea and in the eyes of men was no more than that, a playing of illusions on the shallow void. They passed, and there remained the shapelessness and the cold. Nothing else. Sparrowhawk was looking at him, and he had looked down to avoid that gaze. But there spoke in Arran unexpectedly a little voice of courage or of mockery. It was arrogant and pitiless, and it said, "Coward! Coward, will you throw even this away?" So he looked up, with a great effort of his will, and met his companion's eyes. Sparrowhawk reached out and took his hand in a hard grasp, so that both by eye and by flesh they touched. He said Arran's true name, which he had never spoken. "Lebanon." Again he said it. "Lebanon, this is, and thou art. There is no safety, and there is no end. The word must be heard in silence. There must be darkness to see the stars. The dance is always danced above the hollow place, above the terrible abyss. Aaron clenched his hands and bent his forehead down till it pressed against Sparrowhawk's hand. I failed you, he said. I will fail you again, and fail myself. I have not strength enough. You have strength enough. The mage's voice was tender, but beneath tenderness was that same hardness that had risen in the depths of Aaron's own shame and mocked him. What you love, you will love. What you undertake, you will complete. You are a fulfiller of hope. You are to be relied on. But 17 years give little armor against despair.